One of the most anticipated and widely watched sporting events of the year is happening right now. And it isn't a championship game or a playoff series or a competition of any kind. It's a meeting. Last night in New York, the NFL Draft, officially known as the annual player selection meeting, kicked off at Radio City Music Hall. Not a stadium or an arena, but a theater. For anyone who hasn't seen it, the spectacle, in some ways, isn't much different from what happens on middle school playgrounds all the time. One by one, each franchise announces the name of a college kid they want on their team. He comes to the front, gets a hat and a jersey, and often, this is where it gets different, the promise of a multi-million dollar contract. Fans show up by the thousands and watch by the millions. While the first NFL game is more than 4 months away, many consider this the start to the new season. It also signals the end to all the ridiculous and irrelevant speculation. The so-called draft experts on ESPN and elsewhere make coverage of the presidential primaries seem tame. Every day, a new mock draft for every possible scenario. If Team 1 selects Player A, where will Player B wind up? And will Team 2 trade with Team 3 or Team 4 to move up a spot to acquire Player C? Pick 1, pick 2, where would you put RG3? That's Heisman winner Robert Griffin III. The interest is only more intense in cities where hope, or if you prefer, desperation, reigns highest. After all, those teams seemingly most lacking in talent get to go first, to each according to its needs. In sports, that ain't socialism, it's parity. It wasn't always this overblown. In 1980, when ESPN first contacted the NFL about televising its draft, then-Commissioner Pete Rozelle reportedly asked, why? Now the draft is broadcast live on two networks and set new ratings records when it moved to prime time in 2010. That first night, its 8.3 million viewer average beat out everything on TV, including every televised competition, except Survivor. Last year, some 43 million people watched at least part of the draft, at a time when the lockout meant the NFL technically wasn't even in business. No matter who the Chiefs wind up picking in the draft now underway, I'm sure it will be hotly debated. I mean, we still talk about that one time the Chiefs took some guy named Todd Blackledge while Dan Marino and Jim Kelly were just sitting there. But then there are the picks nobody is talking about, the talent nobody will take an early chance on. By the end of the seventh round on Saturday, 253 players will have been drafted, with the last one earning the unofficial title of Mr. Irrelevant. In 2009, that honor went to Chiefs kicker Ryan Succop. Succop, of course, made the team, started every game, and tied the NFL rookie record for field goal percentage. And if you remember those 2009 Chiefs, you know they settled for a lot of field goals. The draft is just that, a draft, a rough idea of what tomorrow's teams and superstars might look like, which players will wind up with their busts in the Hall of Fame, and which ones are just busts. With each trip to that podium, winners and losers are being made, though it will take months and maybe years to know which is which. Sure, being a sports fan is about getting lost in those exhilarating moments of competition at full tilt, but really, those moments are few and far between. So mostly, when we're not reminiscing about the past, we fans are dreaming and arguing and conjecturing and worrying about the future. The next pitch, the next game, the next season, the next generation. Taken from that perspective, the NFL draft is still overhyped and overblown, but hardly irrelevant.
With the 11th pick in the 2012 NFL draft, the Kansas City Chiefs select Dontari Poe, nose tackle, Memphis.
How about that? Wow.
I'm here in the studio now with Victor Wishna. You know, in a really strange way, Victor, I find the draft, you know, this is one of the great mysteries of my life. I'm really drawn to it, and I can't figure out why. You know, it's the drama, I guess, leading up to it. And, you know, 3 months from now, no one remembers the draft that much. No one talks about it. But in the meantime, I'm really sort of, my son and I were really sort of watching it with great interest last night.
Yeah, it definitely, It's interesting as a spectacle. You know, I mean, in some ways, it's really just, as I said in the piece, it's like watching, you know, teams pick kids they want on their teams. Or it'd be like, you know, if NPR, you know, wanted to, KCR wanted to, you know, do a televised version of its HR decisions, you know, who they were going to hire for next year. But I think what it is, I mean, and what I alluded to in the piece is that it really does, you know, the spectacle of all aside, it really does sort of draw you in because it, you know, it is sort of at the heart of it. It's the optimism of yeah. you know, not just there's always next year, but maybe there's maybe the secret to what we've been hoping for as fans for the next several years is all going to be answered, you know, by one questionable 21-year-old who's never, you know, played professionally.
Well, this giant nose tackle named Dontari Poe now is the number one pick of the Chiefs. What do you make of it? And I always get a little bit suspicious whenever I hear the word potential next to the name with a pick, meaning maybe he pans out and maybe he's not going to pan out.
Right. No, mm-hmm. absolutely. I mean, the definitely the it's not a popular pick. I mean, I mean, and again, I didn't know anything about him like most fans when he was picked. I'm basing this entirely on the you know, the talk of the so-called experts that I just got done deriding in the piece I did. But yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is, you know, he hasn't. I guess he just didn't show a lot of production statistically, yes. and he played in
might be an issue.
For Memphis yeah. in Conference USA. But he's 346 pounds. And the Chiefs have a, you know, this is a crucial need they have to fill, a hole mm-hmm. to fill. And they have one of the best, you know, defensive-minded coaches in the league in Romeo Crennel. So if he, and he's excited about the pick. So if you have a one of the best teachers excited about the potential of a student, then, I'll listen to that over the so-called experts.
Well, you have such an interesting background. You also write a weekly real estate feature of all things for the New York Post. And you do a column, Letters from New York, Victor, and that's syndicated nationally. What's the weekly real estate feature all about?
Oh, it's something I do for the – I'm from Kansas City originally, but yeah. had been living in New York for several years before our family moved back. And when I was in New York, I started doing a feature called one is Houses of the Week, another is called Dream Homes, and it's really just it's sort of similar to what I do with the Fans Notes here, only about real estate. There'll yeah. be snarky write ups about you know small $3 and $4 million homes in the tri-state area, and it's you know because of the wonder of technology. I mean, the irony of that is that. I started doing it, you know, when I was living there and I would go visit the properties or talk to the brokers involved. You know, the whole point of real estate is that it's only worth what it's worth because of where it's located. And now I live 1,000 miles away, but I'm still able to do it via internet and phone.
And I've got to point out, you were once named New York's second funniest amateur Jewish comedian. Seriously, number two?
Yeah, well, you know what? You know what? It doesn't sound that great, but I would like to point out that a few years earlier, I finished third. So if it's, you know, we're talking about potential, we're talking about, you know.
Maybe someday.
Exactly. Yeah. There's still, I'll have to go back there and try for the crown.
Well, Victor Wishin, it's always good to have you here. Thanks for doing the Fans Notes. Thanks for coming in today with us.
Thank you for having me on this historic day.